What do the recent antitrust lawsuits against big tech mean to digital marketers? What you need to know about what is to come right now on The Edge. Go!
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests.
Powered by your digital marketing pioneers, Site Strategics.
This week's featured guest is Sam Tomlinson, Executive Vice President at Warshawski. Now, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
This is Edge of the Web Radio. I'm your host, Aaron Sparks. Welcome back to Edge 2021. Every week, we actually bring you amazing guests to chat with about trending digital marketing topics. We unpack a key marketing topic for our digital marketing audience, and whether you're part of a firm, part of an agency, or a freelancer, this show is for you. So check out all the show information over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. You'll be able to find out everything that we're doing and who our upcoming guests are. The show is actually brought to you by Site Strategics, our parent company and title sponsor of Edge of the Web. We're the pioneers in agile digital marketing. Our core specialties are SEO, social media marketing, conversion rate optimization, and the omni-channel media broadcast. That's what we do here at the studio each and every week. Our focus is agile marketing, results-based marketing that actually works. So if you're interested in what we can do for you, check us out at 877—give us a call, issues. You can't really check out a phone number. Give us a call at 877-SEO for web or 877-736-4932. I want to let you know who's going to be coming up on the show here soon. We're going to be talking to Jason Bonnard, as well as Fernando Angula of SEM Rush, as well as Dan Sharp from Screaming Frog. Certainly want to unpack that software. It's a mainstay for any SEO, and we're going to be able to celebrate his 10-year anniversary of the software and get into some of the specifics of how you can use it for your SEO betterment. If you're interested in being part of the show, just drop us a line over at info@edgeofthewebradio.com. Set your reminders for YouTube, so whenever you see those reminders, you know we've dropped another video, and we're also dicing up our shows into even more snackable pieces for your consuming pleasure. So let us know how we're doing on that front. Be sure to check out our digital marketing news that we release each and every week on Tuesday. We cover three top news stories, as well as get some expert input and subject matter expert on that on a regular basis. It's a short podcast, and we're dialing it in to make sure that you can get your news the way you want it on audio. And we also have a news blog and what have you. So check that out over at Edge of the Web Radio. But certainly subscribe to our feed, because we're throwing in a lot of great audio on a regular basis. All right. That said, we wanted to roll out the red carpet for our first interview in 2021. And what a day it has been today. We want to make sure that we got a guest on here that is not afraid of controversy. And that is the indomitable Sam Tomlinson. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. I mean, after that, I guess I have to be great.
Yeah, you're going to have to swing for the fences, Sam. Let's introduce you to our audience. Sam is the Vice President in Digital Strategy and Digital Analytics over at Warshawski. Sam actually oversees client accounts and is responsible for both strategic direction and execution of all integrated digital marketing over there. He's worked there for 7 years in business and data analytics, digital marketing and strategy, and he currently serves as the VP and head of data analytics teams over there. So tell us a little bit about Warshawski, if you would.
Sure. So Warshawski is a global boutique digital communications agency. Mm-hmm. We're located in Baltimore. We have offices in New York and DC, but we work with clients all around the globe. Cool. So I've gotten really good at this time travel or this time zone kind of game. Where
time like travel? Did he say time travel?
Time travel, yeah. I was just watching Avengers last night, so like time travel's on the brain. But, you know, we work with a wide variety of clients. We have everything from, you know, Series A startups through public companies. Mm-hmm. It's a diverse group. We do a lot of the same things that you guys do, Aaron,
sure,
over at Site Strategics. But it's, you know, my groups are, you know, the digital media group. So we do paid search, paid social, programmatic display, video,
right,
conversion rate optimization, landing page development, web development. And then, you know, as an agency, we also offer the traditional advertising. So we're, you know, running national TV campaigns for brands. We do PR, which is kind of where we got our start, creative, et cetera. So it's a fully integrated operation. And, you know, always happy to work with great companies.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you certainly are killing it. And a continued contributing member into a number of organizations. You're part of the Digital Analytics Association. You're a frequent columnist over at Marketing Insider, Convince and Convert, and Duct Tape Marketing. Any other areas that you contribute?
I've been on SEJ a couple times, so I do that. And then just the speaking circuit.
Yep.
So I think that's kind of where we hung out last was somewhere
pre-COVID. It was San Jose over at SMX last year, 2020, and had a nice dinner there.
A year ago.
I remember hanging out for steaks.
Yeah, we had some steaks and good stuff.
Steaks. That was good.
And boy, the speaking circuit certainly has changed. Give me your take on what's going on. I mean, are you still able to engage? Are you been part of the virtual circuit now?
Yeah, definitely. So I've been doing the virtual stuff. A couple of the conferences that I was scheduled to speak at went completely virtual. So was really thrilled to be able to do that.
Cool.
Just most recently was Search Marketing Australia, which I think went live sometime in December. But time is weird now, so
Because you're time traveling.
Exactly. See, you get it.
Time doesn't matter anymore. We can rack up those virtual conferences like nobody's business. So our heart really goes out to groups like Third Door Media and other conference organizations, because part of this fabric, I mean, it literally is a connective tissue across the entire world, be able to touch base and be able to sit down, just like we had dinner back in San Jose, just be able to talk and rub elbows with the people that we only know over social. And I mean, social certainly has grown, but man, we're missing those days to be able to connect. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so much easier, honestly. Like, it's nice to be able to go to a conference, to see the people that you talk to all the time, to exchange ideas. And I mean, virtual is fine, but it's not the same.
No.
I don't think it's supposed to be, right? It's supposed to be different. Like, the whole point of going to a conference or going to an event is that whole experience that you just kind of create the environment.
Yep, absolutely.
It sucks.
It does suck. But
looks like we're on the rebound, right?
Yes, absolutely. And
like a vaccine thing now, so that's cool.
We will will this into existence, hopefully. And we actually talked to George Wynn over Third Door this last week, and they've got some things in the works. Not only the regular scheduled conferences, they're thinking about a few more here this year. Can't give away how many they're going to have, but and we even asked, is there a plan B, or hopefully a plan A, of hitting boots on the ground at a conference, right? They got to eyeball that, and we hope to the best on all fronts and all the organizations out there. Anyway, that's where we met, and we certainly wanted to connect with you and had some great talks back in San Jose. You also came on the show here last year talking with Kirk Williams as we were going over another set of controversies out in the Google Ads space.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was. So we wanted to get you back because something else is bubbling to the surface, Sam. It's antitrust lawsuits inside of against big tech. And we knew we needed to go to you to really unpack that and open up a Pandora's box of commentary. Federal regulators and state attorneys have expressed growing unease in the big tech and just the power of technology giants, right? I mean, it's obvious. We're hearing it all the time.
It's where you start usually, right?
Yep, pretty much. They start getting pissed off. And there's been a lot of struggles on how to actually bring a case because it's complex. And there's a lot of markets that are actually being competed in. Arguing that the firms are actually harming consumers, it's pretty challenging because of all the different areas in which big tech plays. So what I wanted to first do is help our listeners who may not even be familiar with what antitrust is, kind of give a description of this as well as what are some examples of antitrust. So first and foremost, an example of antitrust was back in 1872, Standard Oil, with J.D. Rockefeller. Right. This is where everything started to originate from. He was head of his trust, and he was offering his competitors two choices, either join us or be destroyed. Kind of like the Borg, right?
Yeah, so it was good old-fashioned shakedown.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was God bless America.
Well, fast forward. I mean, the whole point is trusts are large organizations, and the concept is a misnomer. or it can be perceived as one. We're not talking about trusting these organizations. These are trusts. And the point of this is to help protect diversity and competition in the marketplace and don't allow large organizations to scoop up smaller ones. So there was a Microsoft case that was another famous example here that came up over the last decade and a half when the tech companies started bundling products such as Windows and Explorer, their browser at the time. They ran afoul of the law. But they still allowed other options to exist, Apple and such. So consumers had choices to purchase different browsers, different platforms, but they still got stung. And the company actually lost about $70 billion in the marketplace because of the injunctions that were put on Microsoft from that. So what's happening now? We've got Amazon, we got Apple, we got Google and Facebook. And the EU is taking Amazon on right now. There's a slew of cases coming out. 48 attorney generals and the Federal Trade Commission just went after Facebook. And there are also two fresh AG cases from the Justice Department against Alphabet, the parent company of Google. All right, so tee this up to me, Sam. What in the world is happening on big tech? Why are these organizations target for antitrust attacks from government and lawsuits?
Yeah, I think that's it's a big question, right?
Yeah,
but I think you start with, you had a good primer there. Like antitrust is intended to ensure that marketplaces are healthy and functioning as markets.
Right.
And what you've seen in a really short order of time, it's quite frankly unprecedented in the history of capitalism, is the explosion of tech, right? You go from, when I was born or I was in elementary school, tech was a cool, nice to have, like mm-hmm. fun little thing. And that this is the mid 90s, right? I was in elementary school, late 90s.
Okay, then, you don't need to rub that in. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Right. Yeah, I'm just saying. But like, it's there and it's kind of interesting, but it's not anything critical.
Right.
To 2010, and tech is pretty much the backbone of the U.S. economy at that point. Just no one knows it yet.
It's moved into almost like a utility, right?
Yeah, it's become in some sense a utility, but it's core to the operation of the economy. To now, where really the mega caps that are dominating and in some ways kind of contributing the most value to the U.S. economy are tech. I mean, if you look at the largest companies on the planet by market cap, they're tech.
Right.
It's Amazon, it's Apple, it's Facebook. And when you go from that, you end up in this weird situation where you've basically propped up a huge industry with nothing to support it. Every other industry that we talk about that's really heavily regulated, finance, auto, et cetera, mm-hmm. every one of them grew up over decades. And as they grew up and as they got more sophisticated and as they got more central, regulation caught up correspondingly.
Right.
With tech, you have this kind of dual problem with, number one, it's gone from cool, but interesting, but not really essential, to mission critical in a really short period of time. Meanwhile, you end up in this situation where regulators and lawmakers don't understand it. They don't know what to do about it. They are both trying to take advantage of it for their own personal ends and regulate it because they don't want to get screwed by it.
Right.
And the result was nothing happens, right? So you have no regulation from a critical industry. And now everyone's like, oh my God, they've gotten too big. Mm-hmm. Facebook is almost a $1 trillion company. Apple is well over a $1 trillion company. Amazon's a $1 trillion company.
Yep.
These are huge, huge, huge enterprises. So now you end up with if you go with Heidegger, right? You start with this thesis, you go to the antithesis. Now we have to get to a synthesis. So the thesis was big tech becomes huge. The antithesis, the swing back of the pendulum, so to speak, is, oh my God, antitrust lawsuits everywhere. And now we're trying to figure out where do we settle in the middle. I think that's the big picture of what a lot of people that think about tech and antitrust and where is this going are trying to think about now and trying to figure out, because that where we end up is critical for all of us moving forward in the digital advertising industry, as consumers, as users of digital products, as the digital products themselves in some instance.
But the critical thing here is, and that's why I started up with where antitrust came from back in 1872 or what have you, these laws are archaic. these laws, to your point, haven't caught up with tech. So even looking at big tech in the perspective of they're too huge because they're, one, making too much money, or they're omni-platform, the old laws have no connection to what is happening. I mean, it's not even a pendulum. The paradigm has changed completely. It's not just a shift. It literally is an explosion of tech. And we not only do we not have regulations to help protect customers, but it's never been done before. And there's so many new concepts in digital that have never existed on the face of the planet. You can't govern with a tool set that has no bearing on, it has no context into what we're dealing with on the digital front. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a different approach, right? Like the U.S. approach to antitrust, like you mentioned, is firmly rooted in this kind of judicial legal concept of we prove a wrong, a violation of the law. So in this case, the applicable laws are the Sherman Act of 1890 and then the Clayton Act of like 1914, which was amended in like 34. But these are almost a century old laws, or more than a century old in the case of the Sherman Act. And we prove a violation of law, and then we elect remedies to solve or to address those, right? That's the US model. The European model is actually really different. And the European model is mostly like, we find something we don't like, we make laws, get over it,
and then move on.
And that's kind of how we got to GDPR, but that's not the only issue, right? We saw the other really famous antitrust case is the AT&T Big Bell case.
Exactly, yeah.
And Europe approached that really differently than the U.S. did. The U.S. just kind of fractured AT&T into the seven baby bells, which were local monopolies, and then created a market for long distance. Mm-hmm. Europe basically treated it like a utility and sold the last mile distribution and required those companies to provide access, and basically created a market for that consumer connect.
Right.
And if you look at which one of those results was actually healthier long term, it's a pretty compelling case that the European model there actually worked significantly better than the American model.
Absolutely.
Because you have, in almost every instance in Europe, the dominant country at the time this proposed change was created and enacted is not the dominant company now. And in the U.S., that's not always the case.
Yeah, none of those bells exist except one, I think, from that original judgment. So today's technology is much more complex than it was at the time of the Bell system, IBM and Microsoft. It's just not the same scenario. So there are at the root of these concepts are principles that apply. We want to solve a lack of competition, right? Mm-hmm. We want to solve also privacy in this space is a key factor. That's a whole nother discussion. But beyond that, for digital, the users of social media are vulnerable to be fed misinformation from these platforms as well. And you also have something else that has never existed, a full controlled ecosystem from the ad environment to the services that can actually also compete for the same business that the advertisers are actually applying for. So you've got almost a fully controlled ecosystem in certain cases like Google and Facebook, where they serve as the pitcher, the catcher, as well as the ref in these environments, right?
Yeah.
So new laws have to be enacted. New concepts along these laws have to be embraced. You just can't bring a giant hammer to just break up a company, especially when innovation is at the heart of this, right?
So I think so. I mean, I think the biggest thing that gets lost in this whole debate is that this isn't simple.
Nope.
This is a really, and there's like this native like default that we have to go to the simplest possible concept. But the reality, like you mentioned, there's a lot of competing factors. There's a lot of trade-offs. Mm-hmm. So I love the H.L. Mencken quote. You know, there for every complex problem, there's always a solution that's simple, easy, and wrong. And in this case, the break them all up is simple, easy, and wrong.
Yep.
The do nothing is simple, easy, and wrong. And that puts us in this weird position where now we have to start talking about the trade-offs. There is always a trade-off between security and privacy, right? Yep. We've talked about this in national defense. We've talked about this in law. We've talked about this in law enforcement, to be candid, but that's a trade-off, right? There's always a trade-off between scale and customer affordability. The bigger the scale, the cheaper the prices can get. But the smaller the scale, the more a local small business can compete, right? So you have all these interesting trade-offs. And at the core of it, you have to, I think, get clear first about what is the problem you're trying to solve.
Right.
Which, to be fair, in every one of these cases, no one's particularly clear about that. Right? Are we trying to solve for the problem of big tech being mean to big tech? Does anybody really care if Google's mean to Apple?
Right.
No. Are we trying to solve for the problem of big tech being mean to other businesses? That's, you know, Google's advertising policies. Mm. That's Amazon and their relationship with their marketplace sellers. That's right. Facebook and their relationship with literally everybody because Facebook.
Right.
That's, you know, this Apple and the App Store issue that we're seeing slowly unfold between them and whichever developer it is that they annoyed. Right. Is it tech being mean to people? And that's your privacy concerns. That's right. User data exchange. That's the ability and portability of your data. Are we talking about big tech being mean to competitors like the startup space, potential viable competitors?
Yep.
That's a potential issue, but maybe it's not. Are we talking about bad people using tech? And that's a bad thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think you have all these different problems, and each one of these requires a different solution. And to your point, Aaron, not all of these are competition problems.
Nope.
Some of these are regulation problems. Some of these are human problems. Like bad people using tech just happens when you connect 5 billion people in 2 decades. Some of them are bad people.
Yeah, we don't have that governing system. We all got thrown into the deep end of the pool. And inevitably, you're going to have an issue there. And don't even get us started about privacy mining of underage youth. We just talked about this on the show here this week. So there's a mess of stuff out there. And you're right, there's not one solution. So part of any government's responsibility in this space is to mature and grow into their responsibilities across this multivaried landscape. It's not the same scenario of just break up a company and fracture it into other spaces because it again, that's the most rudimentary concept, and it has nothing to do with the solutions that you're trying to solve as you just went through the entire bullet list right there. So what does this all mean to the digital consumer? We got big tech being attacked with lawsuits and different FTC complaints. What does that do to the digital consumer? Because ultimately, there's a protection goal from the government, but at the same time, let me pause and side note here for another concept here, is that we're also looking at these big tech platforms as more utilities than anything else. They've gone so far, they've permeated our existence so far, especially for COVID and what we've just gone through. Big tech saved our ass. We have to put it on the block there is that Zoom technology saved companies from going under, to be honest with you. We have to understand we're in a new playing field, and there are new responsibilities of companies now that there's such a reliance on this technology for economy as well as of connectivity. What's your thoughts on that rant that I just gave you?
No, I think there's some truth there. I mean, the word utility in the U.S. lexicon is charged, right? That means a really specific thing. And, you know, maybe that applies here, maybe it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're talking about, I mean, at the core of the utility law was this kind of idea that you mentioned that I think you have to take a step back before you have the utility conversation. You have to talk about network effects, because that's kind of where the utility conversation comes in,
right?
At least in part. So the idea is of a network effect is that as each incremental user or whatever node is added to a network, the network itself becomes more valuable. Mm-hmm. And we see this like really clearly in social media, right? If no one's on a platform, the platform's not worth jack.
Right.
But when 2 billion people are on the planet or are on the platform's worth a lot. And that's why Facebook is worth a lot. You don't go to Facebook for the sake of Facebook. You go to Facebook because that's where your friends are.
Right.
You know, we saw the same kind of thing, honestly, in the Microsoft case. But in there, I think what the government got wrong and what I think they're getting wrong again is the network effects for Office are really different than the network effects from the Internet Explorer, right? People didn't use Windows or they didn't use Word because it was pre-installed on Windows, they used Word because everybody else used Word.
Right.
Right. The network effect was internal to the product. And the same thing you see here is like people don't use Facebook because they own Instagram. People use Facebook because their family and friends are on Facebook. I mean, I don't use Facebook, but
exactly. Like it's out there, and there's other needs. And had it been just for family connection, right, then we wouldn't be having a discussion here. It's the monetization of these platforms that has really turned the corner on being a target, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the monetization, it's the scale, it's the. In some ways, there are some allegations of anti-competitive conduct. Mm-hmm. That's always a problem, mm-hmm. right? You know, you start to hurt people. But then there's also what I'm going to call the regulator's discovery of how every other business works. Like everyone's getting mad at Amazon for their third-party sellers.
Right.
Guess what? Walmart's done this for years.
Absolutely.
And before they did it, CVS did it. And before CVS did it, Sears did it.
Right.
They all do it. Like this is just how retail works.
Yep.
Like, do you think Walmart lets people into their stores for the fun of it? No. Do you think Walmart collects all this Ring data for the fun of it? No. They get their Ring data. They have their POs from their suppliers. They look, they know exactly what your COGS are. They know exactly what your probability thresholds are. And what do? They call up your same manufacturer,
right,
and they get the same product for cheaper. They slap a good value label on it, and they sell it right next to your product in their store. That is how Walmart works.
In a lot of ways, that's how capitalism works. So
that's the challenge.
That's
not bad. No. That's just business.
That's just business. Like, and I think it's just been magnified to such a scale, right, and Amazon was the first to do that. So now we are dealing with another issue of, are people just pissed that profitability came along for the ride?
I mean, probably. But I think a lot of people, in some ways, right, this conversation about how these platforms operate ends up devolving, like you said, into this conversation of people are angry, people see things they don't like. Mm-hmm. There are allegations, like for instance, Facebook had this huge Cambridge Analytica data breach, which the UK Competition and Market Authority came up with a comprehensive report and basically just said, this really wasn't what they made it out to be. This was just fraud.
Right.
Which just fraud is bad. Let's be clear. But it's not like they had like all this insidious things and, you know, they came out and basically said they really couldn't do the things they said they could.
Right.
But
at the same time,
for 2 years, you have this out in the marketplace, right? People are pissed because they think their data is being weaponized. They think that, you know, their information is being bought and sold, and they're right in some extent. How much it matters is another question.
And that's the thing. It's those hyper-react perspectives on this. You've got profitability, huge growth in these platforms. You've got the new environment of privacy and even the concept of digital ID. And it all is a pretty ugly stew of, again, reactionary components. And then you have a governmental body that has no bloody clue what the industry even does. Right. So you throw that into the mix, and now you have these, they're not arbitrary, but you have these lawsuits that are, again, using archaic laws to try to do some brain salad surgery on something. And it's just not going to work.
No, it's not. And I think you see that really clearly in the Google case. But before that, the U.S. House's report on antitrust that came out over the summer was basically a freshman college report with complete with the spelling errors and the ridiculous logic and the 17-year-old charts. Like it was really of, you know, if like a student that, you know, I had whatever turn that in, they'd be getting an F, but that passes in the U.S. Congress these days.
Oh, okay. So with that note, let's wrap up our first segment of this important discussion with Sam Tomlinson. We're going to cover in our second episode the immediate issues that are facing Google and Facebook regarding antitrust and privacy that's been building, as well as what this means to the digital marketer, because this is what it's really all about, what the digital marketer needs to be empowered and aware of going into this year and the next, because this stuff's not going away, folks. So thanks so much, Sam, and we'll join you in the second segment. Make sure you listen to the second part of the Sam Tomlinson interview by visiting edgeofthewebradio.com. Follow Sam on Twitter at DigitalSamIam and follow us on Twitter at EdgeWebRadio. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share this podcast with others. That's the best marketing that we can do. And assuming that you like it, since you're at this point in the show, maybe you do. Remember to stay safe, stay well, and do not be a piece of cyber driftwood.